I think that song illustrates perfectly the very purpose with which we are going to study this morning. In Isaiah 55, beginning in verse 3, Isaiah is referring to the coming Messiah, as he often does throughout his prophetic book. And he says, "Incline your ear and come unto me. Hear, and your soul shall live. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. Behold, I have given him for a witness to the people, a leader and commander to the people. Behold, thou shalt call a nation that thou knowest not, and nations that knew not thee shall run unto thee because of the Lord thy God, and for the Holy One of Israel, for he hath glorified thee." There is simply no other whom Isaiah could be referring to other than Jesus Christ. And notice how he is so well illustrated and pictured in these particular verses. It makes mention of he as being the sure mercies of David, that he is a leader and commander to the people, that he is the Holy One of Israel, and he is the one by which we can receive glory. That is a description of Jesus Christ, the one who has been given all power and all authority, Matthew 28 and verse 18. And this morning, I thought what we might do is to go throughout the book of Mark and see how Christ's power and his ability to command is illustrated. And notice how this authority and this command then is transferred into our lives as we then are to submit and are subject unto him as our commander and as our chief. And so this morning we're going to be hitting these points quickly on our quest through the book of Mark in illustrating the power of Christ and ultimately concluding with the greatest power and the greatest command that he has of all. First of all, notice in Mark 4, 35 through 41, that he commanded peace for the storm. Now, a number of these commands that our Lord illustrates within the book of Mark, you're going to notice are commands over nature. Something that had never been done before and something that shall never be accomplished again. The fact that nature, as it has been arranged and set forth by God, being harnessed and controlled by the one who created it. And the first of these instances is in Mark 4, 35 through 41. And he commands peace for this storm. Notice there where the same day when the even was come, he says unto his apostles to pass over onto the other side of the sea. And when they had sent away the multitude whom he had been teaching, they took him as he was in the ship, and there were also with him other little ships. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full. Crossing the Sea of Galilee, you'll see geographically how the sea is arranged, that it is in a bowl to such an extent that a storm can blow up out of the midst of nowhere. And this is one of those instances. They're traveling on what seems to be a peaceful body of water, and then all of a sudden, a storm arises. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him. And they said unto him, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" And he arose, and what does he do? He rebukes the wind and says to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind was calmed. He illustrates and manifests his power over nature, his command over that which he had created, by commanding peace for the storm. Now, who else in the history of this world, or who else in the future of this world, shall have the mighty power of Jesus Christ to command peace over a tempest? Well, there is no other, and there shall be no other. And so, therefore, we see the power of Jesus Christ. The second means of illustration of the power of Christ is seen in the very next chapter, in which He commanded departure for the unclean spirit. He's shown His power over nature, now He's going to show His power over the spiritual realm. In Mark 5, 1 through 13, there's a man on the other side of the sea in the country of the Gadarenes, where Christ came out of the ship, and there was a man that met Him that had an unclean spirit, a devil that had possessed him. He had dwelt among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains. He had been bound with fetters and chains. The chains had been plucked asunder by him, the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. Notice the strength that this man now had because of his possession, to such an extent that chains could not bind him. And so he sees Jesus afar off. He runs to Jesus and he worships Him. And he cries with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with Thee, Jesus, Thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure Thee by God that Thou torment me not." And then notice what he does. He says unto him, "Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit." And he came out. He has shown his power over the natural realm. Now he shows his power over the spiritual realm. And in each instance, Christ is equal to the task. He commands whatever He will or whomever He will because of His great authority and of His great power. Number three, in the very same chapter, He commanded resurrection for Jairus' daughter. In 21 through 23, Jesus is passed again over by ship to the other side of the sea. And many people are gathered unto Him. And behold, there comes one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come, and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live." Well, the result of this occasion is not going to take place till over in verses 35 through 43. But Christ has shown His power over nature. He's shown His power over the spiritual realm. Shall He show His power over death? Absolutely. Because in verse 35 and following, "He yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue, certain which said, Thy daughter is dead." When He left, she was merely sick, close to death. Before He is able to return home, she dies. And imagine the grief and the torment that this man is now in. "And yet they say unto him, Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the Master any further?" And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, He saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, "Be not afraid, only believe." How is it that Christ could instruct peaceful words in the time of such torment? Well, it's because of His power. He suffered no man to follow Him, save Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And He cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when He was come in, He saith unto them, "Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth." What did He mean by that? Well, we're going to see. People thought He was crazy. They had adequate proof to say she'd actually physically died, and yet this man comes in and says she's only sleeping. And yet He goes in to the damsel, takes her by the hand, verse 41, and says unto her, "Damsel, I say unto thee, arise." And what happens? The damsel arises. He's shown His power over nature, shown His power over the spiritual. Now He shows His power over death, and yet that's not all. Number four, in Mark 6, 30 through 44, He commanded sustenance for the 5,000. You remember on that occasion that many had gathered unto Him, and He had taught them, and He had been instructing them in the ways of those things which were more perfect. And in verse 31, He said unto them, "Come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there was many coming and going, they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither out of all cities, and outwent them, and came together unto him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people, and was moved with compassion toward them, because they were as sheep not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came unto him and said, "This is a desert place, and now the time is far past." Time for what? Time to eat. And so he answers and says unto them, "Give ye them to eat then." And they say unto him, "Shall we go and buy 200 penny worth of bread and give them to eat?" And he saith unto them, "How many loaves have ye? Go and see." And when they knew, they say, 5 and 2 fishes. And he commanded them to make all sit down by companies upon the green grass. Well, you have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes, and you expect to feed a multitude of 5,000 men, not even counting the women and children. And yet he tells his disciples, instruct them to sit down and instruct them to prepare. They sat down by ranks and by hundreds and fifties. And when he took the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, he looked to heaven and blessed them, and brake the loaves, gave them to his disciples, and set before them, and the 2 fishes divided he among them all. And they did all eat and were filled. Who? Everybody that was there. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fishes. And they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000 men. An impossible task, naturally. But unto Christ, who has all power and all authority, it is not. And so therefore Christ once again displays his power over those things which otherwise would deem to be not possible. Well, number 5. We find again he shows his power over nature in Mark 6:45-52, when he commanded walking pads for the sea. How many people ever walked on water before? Nobody. And yet here we read of one who most certainly did. Straightway he constrained his disciples to get into the ship and to go to the other side before unto Bethsaida, while he sent away the people. And when he had sent them away, he departed into a mountain to pray. And when even was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he alone on the land. And he saw them toiling and rowing, for the wind was contrary unto them. And about the 4th watch of the night, he cometh unto them. Notice his disciples are on the sea in the boat, he's on the land, and in the 4th watch of the night, he goes to them. Does that mean he got into his own boat and rowed out to them? No. But rather we see that he would have passed by them, but when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit and cried out. Power over nature. There's a little law that we know about called the law of gravity. And walking on water physically and naturally is just simply not possible. But Christ displays his supernatural power over nature, and therefore illustrates his command and his authority as only he would have it. Number 6, in Mark 7:24-30, he commanded purity for the possessed girl. Again, in the same way that he had healed the man with the unclean spirit, we find him doing such once again. Beginning in verse 24, "From thence he arose and went into the borders of Tyre and Sidon, and entered into an house, and would have no man know it, but he could not be hid. For a certain woman, whose young daughter had an unclean spirit, heard of him, and came and fell at his feet." I find something interesting in verse 25 in the fact that knowledge of his power is now spreading. And this woman, though she had never seen him before, yet has heard of his power, and recognizing him, goes and falls at his feet because she had a problem that she knew he was the only one that could fix. And so she comes and falls at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by nation, and she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. But Jesus said unto her, "Let the children first be filled, for it is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it unto the dogs." And she answered and said unto him, "Yes, Lord, yet the dogs under the table eat of the children's crumbs." And he said unto her, "For this saying, go thy way, the devil is gone out of thy daughter. And when she was come to her house, she found the devil gone, and her daughter laid upon the bed. Again, Christ displays his power over the spiritual. A task that otherwise would not be possible for man is made possible by the power of God. Number seven, in the same chapter, Mark 7:31-37, he commanded sound for the deaf man, a man who had not heard, and yet shall be able to hear. Again, he departs from the coast of Tyre and Sidon, comes unto the Sea of Galilee, through the midst of the coast of Decapolis, and they bring unto him one that was deaf, and had an impediment in his speech, and they beseech him to put his hand upon him. Again, knowledge of his power spreading. And he took him aside from the multitude, put his fingers into his ears, and he spit and touched his tongue, and looked up to heaven, and he sighed, and saith unto him, Be opened. And straightway his ears were opened, the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain. Never heard, never spoken. And yet the power of Jesus Christ over the natural made it possible. Number eight. In Mark 8:1-13, once again he commanded food for the multitude. Not something he did only once back a few chapters ago. But now something he does again. In those days the multitudes being very great, and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him and saith unto them, I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now been with me 3 days, and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away fasting to their own houses, they will faint by the way, for diverse of them came from afar. And his disciples answer him, From whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? And he asked them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7. And he commanded the people to sit down on the ground. He took the 7 loaves, gave thanks and brake, and gave to his disciples to set before them. And they did set them before the people. And they had a few small fishes. He blessed them, commanded to set them also before them. And they did eat and were filled, and took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets. Well, you would think his apostles had figured it out by now that he had the power to do anything which he deemed necessary. And thus far in each of these 8 cases, we find him finding things necessary and then goes about to fix them as he so desired. Number 9. In Mark 8:22-25, he commanded sight for the blind man. Again, man who'd never seen since birth. And yet he was then going to be given that ability. He cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, led him out of the town, and when he had spit on his eyes, put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. After that he put his hands again upon his eyes, made him look up, and he was restored and saw every man clearly. Imagine the great blessing this was to this man. No doubt we cannot identify with the situation in which he was. Having the blessing of sight taken from him and going however many years it was without it, not being able to see a thing. And then all of a sudden, spoken word by Jesus Christ, commander of all, and he has sight given unto him. A life-changing event. And it's because of his authority and because of his power. And then number 10, in Mark 9:14-17, he commanded exit for the dumb spirit. And when he had came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them, and the scribes questioning with them. And straightway all the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed. And running to him, saluted him. And he asked the scribes, What question ye with them? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not. Now, stop there in verse 18 and notice the situation. These apostles, having not yet been given the power they were given in Acts 2, were not able to cast out this spirit. In other words, a spiritual situation in among men who have only natural power then was not made possible. These disciples, based solely upon their volition, could not do a thing. It took a supernatural power of God in order to bring about this difference. And that's exactly what we're going to see. It was nothing man could do, but everything that God could do. He answered them and saith, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tare him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming. And he asked his father, how long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, of a child. And oft times it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said unto him, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. Now remember that verse. To him that believeth, all things are possible with God. And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief. And when Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying unto him, thou dumb and deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him, and enter no more into him. And the spirit cried and rent him sore, and came out of him. And he was as one dead, insomuch that many said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. Now, I have no problem in saying that I guarantee this father, from the time that he was a child in which this demon entered into him, to the time that he now was taken out, he had tried everything that he knew to make sure this was done. He did everything he could to ensure his child be able to live a normal life outside of this problem. And yet, what was the only means by which it was possible? If thou canst believe, all things are possible, if thou wilt believe. Well, some people will take that verse grossly out of context and say, well, that means anything and all things that can be thought of by the human will are possible if only we would believe in God. Well, that's taking that way out of context. There he's talking about things regarding the will of God and things that are beneficial for man. And what would be the most beneficial thing man could ever devise, man could ever hope for, man could ever obtain? Well, it couldn't be physical, because we know that those things physical are only temporary. Paul went to a great deal of detail and many of his epistles, especially in 1 Corinthians, to talk about how the carnal desire of man is for vain, because it's only at most for a lifetime. It's temporary. At some point, those things are going to vanish away. That's why Christ made the command to not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth. Why? Because moth and rust can corrupt, and thieves can break through and steal. He's saying there that if you lay up treasures only on earth, your life is lived in vain, because those things can be taken away in the blink of an eye. But rather, he said, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through or steal. Matthew 6, 19 and 20. And so what's his point? Well, all things that are beneficial for eternity apply to the Spirit. And Christ never had his mind set on things of a carnal nature. And so that's how I know that verse does not talk about all things and anything man can devise being possible if only we would believe. It replies to those things of which Christ was concerned. And what was he concerned with? Well, he tells us in his mission, Luke 19:10. I have come to seek and to save that which was lost. He was concerned with the soul. Those things of a spiritual and eternal nature. And so then what does all of the power thus far displayed in the book of Mark mean to us? Well, obviously there are the answers that these are proofs of Christ's deity. They're proofs of Christ's power. They're proofs of the Word of God as being the all-inspired and adequate will of God. But personally and individually, what do these things illustrate for me and for my benefit in His command and in His authority? Well, He tells us. Because just as He had power and command over the natural, and just as He had power and command over the spiritual, and just as He had power and command over death, so then does He have power and command over life, spiritually. And everything we've thus far mentioned in the book of Mark leads up in anticipation to Mark 16, 15, and 16, where the greatest power of Christ ever is then noted, when He then commands redemption for the masses. Because it's based on His power, it's based on His authority, and it's based on His command that He then gives this teaching and this instruction. He said unto them, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned." That is the authority of Christ as it relates to me personally. Based on all the authority given unto Him by God, which is all authority, He gave the command to weary ourselves in those things spiritual, in working among others and in working within ourselves. And notice that as His command was seen in every occasion, when He commanded peace for the storm, what happened? There was peace. When He commanded departure for the unclean spirit, what happened? He departed. When He demanded resurrection for the daughter of Jairus, she was resurrected. When He commanded sustenance for the 5,000, they were filled. When He commanded walking paths for the sea, He went out upon it. When He commanded purity for the possessed girl, she was made free. When He commanded sound for the deaf man, he heard. When He commanded food for the multitude, they ate. When He commanded sight for the blind man, he saw. And when He commanded exit for the dumb spirit, he got out of town. What then is concluded in His authority? It is sure and steadfast. And if I am going to have any hope for that which is to come when this life is over, I must put my complete trust in God, and in His will, and in His authority. If we will believe, all things are possible. Well, what about the man who has lived his entire life in sin? And he's done things beyond the wildest imagination of others. And they have crept into such a deep and dark crevice of sin that they don't believe it's possible to come out. If thou believest, all things are possible with God. That's what it's telling us. In essence, we can summarize the book of Mark with that idea. All things were possible with the power of Christ. And all things as pertaining to our spirit and pertaining to our soul are possible with Christ, if only we would believe. Do you believe? Do you believe that Christ is the Son of God? Do you believe that He has been given all authority? Do you believe that He and only He is the means by which our souls can be saved? If so, and you're not a part of His body, why? Why not make the decision this morning to put off any procrastination upon your part and come in obedience to the gospel? Humble yourself before the mighty hand of God. And do that which you know to be right in preparing your soul for that vast eternity which shall have no end. If you're here this morning and you are a child of God and yet you've wandered back into a lifestyle of sin, friend, it's not too late. God's long-suffering is still with us. And as long as that long-suffering is here, we still have hope. So why not come and prepare yourself, because we may not have another opportunity. Do it now. Give yourself the blessed assurance that is found only in Christ based on His power. Jesus is the master commander. He had command over the natural. He had command over the spiritual. He had command over death. He has command unto life. Come this morning, if you are subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ, and take care of your soul right now while together we stand and sing.